WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You've probably read about the controversial new film adaptation of Lolita. The one that was made several years ago has played in Europe and Moscow, but couldn't find a distributor here in the U.S. Well, you can see it soon. It opens in Los Angeles today for a week-long run to qualify it for the Academy Awards. It premieres on the Showtime channel August 2nd and opens in movie theaters around the country in September. The screenplay was adapted from Nabokov's novel by my guest Stephen Schiff. And yes, it's the same Stephen Schiff who used to be Fresh Air's film critic. He left criticism and his position at The New Yorker to pursue his screenwriting career. His screenplay for Lolita has just been published in book form. Lolita is generally acknowledged as one of the greatest novels of the century, but there have always been people who've condemned it on moral grounds because the narrator of the story, Humbert Humbert, is a pedophile who seduces a 12-year-old girl. She's a couple of years older than that in the film. Humbert Humbert marries Lolita's mother, a woman he has no interest in, just to stay close to Lolita. Here's a scene after the mother's death, when Humbert, now Lolita's stepfather, has taken her out of summer camp. He hasn't told Lolita yet about her mother's death. They're on the road and staying at a hotel together and for the first time in the same bedroom. Jeremy Irons plays Humbert. Dominic Swain plays Lolita.
Wait a sec. You're telling me we're sleeping in one room? With one bed?
I've asked him to send up a cot. Which I'll use if you like.
You're crazy.
Why, my darling?
Because, my darling, when my darling mother finds out, she'll divorce you and strangle me.
No, listen to me a moment. For all practical purposes, I am your father, and I'm responsible for your welfare. Now, we're not rich. So when we travel, we're sure to be, I mean, we'll be thrown together. Sometimes. Two people sharing the same hotel room are bound to enter into a kind of...
The word is incest.
Stephen Schiff, welcome back to Fresh Air. What a pleasure to have you back under these circumstances.
What a pleasure it is to be back. It's fun.
Let's start with this. What do you see Lolita as really being about? I mean, a lot of people know the novel only as being a novel about a sexual pervert who loves young girls.
Well, that's it. That's what it's about, all right. Actually, this is such a hard question, and I've been asked it a lot, and I wish I could come up with a better answer, because the thing is, like any great work of art, and this is, one of the great works of art of our century, it has many levels, and it's about many, many things, And in a way, talking about what it's about is defeating of the novel and its purposes. And, of course, there was no one who was more against interpretation than Vladimir Nabokov himself. So, yes, it's certainly the character at its center is a pedophile. Is it a study of pedophilia? No. It's a study of this peculiar character who sees the world through his obsession and whose obsession finally defeats what we come to recognize as a great, noble, and interesting mind. So it's about obsession. It's about America in the 1940s. It takes place in 1947, and that's where we set our movie as well, which is a very unusual time for a movie to be set. It's not the 50s. It's not Finney cars and bar hops or car hops on roller skates. It's not rock and roll music. It's before the invention of the great American teenager, really. So you have this pre-adolescent or budding adolescent girl in a culture that has not yet come into being to serve her consumer interests. It's about, it's about so many things, but those are some of them.
There's one part when Humbert, the pedophile, talks about the coming together of the beastly and the beautiful. And I guess that's in part what the novel's about, too.
Yeah, that's right. It would almost be a Beauty and the Beast story, except that Humbert is very devastatingly attractive, and all through the novel, he kind of slyly reminds us that he's often mistaken for a movie star. He's so handsome, I think that's part of Nabokov's way of setting up the idea that it would make sense for a young girl to be attracted to him, as young girls often are attracted to movie stars.
The novel Lolita is a first-person monologue told by a pedophile who's totally self-deluded and uses this beautiful and ornate language to convince himself and his readers that his perversion is a symptom of his extreme sensitivity and romanticism. He thinks of himself as an artist, someone with that special gift of perceiving this special sexual quality in young girls. And I thought I'd play a reading that Jeremy Irons, the star of the movie Lolita, did from the audiobook version of the novel. And so this is from the audiobook version. And Humbert has just described the qualities that qualify a girl as a nymphette. And he says at first they have to be between ages 9 and 14. And he says nymphettes aren't merely nice or cute or even sweet and attractive. And only special men can spot the true nymphette.
A normal man, given a group photograph of schoolgirls or Girl Scouts and asked to point out the comeliest one, will not necessarily choose the nymphette among them. You have to be an artist and a madman, a creature of infinite melancholy with a bubble of hot poison in your loins and a super voluptuous flame permanently aglow in your subtle spine. Oh, how you have to cringe and hide in order to discern at once by ineffable signs the slightly feline outline of a cheekbone, the slenderness of a downy limb, and other indices which despair and shame and tears of tenderness forbid me to tabulate, the little deadly demon among the wholesome children. She stands, unrecognized by them, and unconscious herself of her fantastic power. Furthermore, since the idea of time plays such a magic part in the matter, the student should not be surprised to learn that there must be a gap of several years, never less than 10, I should say, generally 30 or 40, and as many as 90 in a few known cases, between maiden and man, to enable the latter to come under the nymphette's spell.
That's Jeremy Irons reading from the audiobook of Nabokov's Lolita, and my guest Stephen Schiff wrote the screenplay for the new movie adaptation of Lolita. Well, that reading, I think, gives us a sense of Nabokov's creation of the inner mind of Humbert. What were you able to do in the screenplay to show how his inner mind works? That's something that's very tricky to do in a movie. It's much easier to do that through an interior monologue on the page.
Yeah, it's a very interesting problem in general in adaptation. And, of course, Lolita is kind of a notoriously tough adaptation because the novel, by its very nature, is something that goes inside. And when you have an unreliable narrator like Humbert, and an obsessed narrator like Humbert, there's nothing but his subjectivity to work with. And so how, in translating it to a medium that is basically outsides the surfaces of things, that's what film's about. It's always showing you what's outside, and the outside can only indicate what's inside. How do you do that? Particularly in the case of Lolita, where everything that we read is filtered through this obsession, so that we know that there are distortions there, but there's no substitute for the distortions except what we might imagine. In other words, Lolita herself may be a very ordinary, you know, attractive, pleasant child in the pages of the book and in the sentences that sort of unreal from this fevered imagination. She becomes this goddess-like creature, romanticized to the nth degree. And yet, in a movie, she has to have an objective existence. You have to be able to see her and talk to her and imagine what she's really like. Likewise, their relationship has no real recognizable existence in the pages of the novel because it's so distorted by his obsession. And yet, when you translate it to a movie, you have to see the relationship. And so I had to kind of make it up. I had to kind of extrapolate from what I knew about adolescence and what I could imagine from what I could glean from between the lines of what he was saying, what many a reader might glean. You know, I had to invent a Lolita and invent a relationship. And there's a funny moment where after they are, in a way, on the road together, after Lolita's mother is dead, when they're sort of driving around this young country and exploring their relationship just as Humbert is exploring an America he doesn't know. When they are a couple, they're an odd couple, they're an extremely odd couple, but it's not all sort of, grime and grit and horror. You know, there are moments when it's something else, and how to imagine that. So those were some of the challenges and some of the great pleasures, you know, sort of imagining the other side of Lolita, the side outside of Humbert's consciousness.
Of course, what made the novel and now the film so controversial is the sexual relationship between Humbert and Lolita. I'm sure when you started writing the screenplay, you knew that could give you a lot of trouble. Did you start with the idea of having to deal with controversy? When you started writing, did you say, how am I going to write a movie that will actually make it to the screen, that will get around all the protests? And if so, did that have a kind of chilling effect on you at all?
No, I couldn't really do that. I couldn't begin by censoring myself. I, of course, wasn't naive enough to think that there would be no problems. I was certainly naive enough to think that there wouldn't be this kind of problem. But to write with that in mind would have been to defeat the process at the outset, and I wasn't going to do it. And besides, what's on the page is one thing, and then it has to be translated. And what I wrote could have been translated more or less lubriciously. So in a way, I wrote what I thought should be written. I wrote what I thought should be on the screen. And then in a way, let everyone else worry about it.
Well, good. Let me give an example. And let's see what you wrote on the page and compared that to what was shown on the screen. Probably the most controversial.
Hoist by my own petard.
Probably the most controversial scene in the movie is the scene where when the scene opens, we see Lolita reading the comics. As the camera pulls back, we realize she's sitting on Humbert's lap. And then as the scene goes on, we realize that as she's reading the comics and chuckling to herself about the comics, they're actually having sex while she's seated on his lap. And eventually the comics take kind of second place to the feelings that are overtaking her during the sexual act. How did that read on the page?
Well, you have it in front of you, perhaps. I don't. It's very detailed and straightforward and sexy. And, you know, it doesn't have anatomical details on it. There's a fly crawling around on the comics and on her body. There's a moment where I say something like, I can't recall the exact words, but something about how there's very little difference in the pleasure she takes from the comics and the pleasure she takes from the sex. And, you know, there's just a slight difference in facial expression, perhaps. So that's that gave Adrian Lyne, the director, a great deal of leeway to do with that scene what he wished. When he shot it as I had written it, with a certain amount of nudity, not much and not graphic, certainly. And that nudity disappeared in the editing room, partly under the watchful eyes of a lawyer who had been brought in by the company in response to the passage of the Child Pornography Prevention Act of 1996, which wasn't in existence when we filmed the scene, but was when we edited it. And the nudity was removed, and now I think the scene is still very, very powerful and shows exactly what I wanted it to show, but in a way that is very far from being explicit.
When you wrote the scene, did you think it would be as clear visually as it was that they were engaged in intercourse?
I certainly thought it would be. I thought we had to make it clear. That's for sure. And I thought that there could be no doubt. If the scene left a doubt in the viewer's mind, then the scene failed. If the scene left a doubt in the lawyer's mind, I was happy. And in the editing room, at that moment, we managed to convince the lawyer that there was some doubt. I hope there's no doubt, and I think from the reaction to the scene that has been generally universal that there is no doubt. When you see the film, as it is now, I feel like the scene could have been pushed a little further. And, of course, it was before the lawyer got into the editing room. But I think there's absolutely no doubt, and I think it still has a kind of devastating effect. And if you're not uncomfortable watching that scene, then I haven't done my job and Adrian hasn't done his job. I mean, if you can watch all of Lolita feeling blithe, happy, and pleasant, and what a wonderful escape, then we have failed miserably.
My guest is Stephen Schiff. He wrote the screenplay for the new film adaptation of Lolita. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stephen Schiff. He wrote the new screen adaptation of Lolita. When we left off, he was telling us about how a lawyer was involved in the editing of the film. Lawyers also reviewed the script before the shooting even began. Did you have to change anything because it was potentially breaking a law?
No. It was about methods of filming. For instance, obviously, if Adrian wanted to use nudity, he couldn't use Dominique Swain, the young girl who played Lolita. He had to use a body double. Any contact scene between Dominique and Jeremy, there had to be this pad between them so that they were never actually touching. At all times when Dominique was on the set, her mother was on the set and her tutor was also on the set. So there are all these rules that we followed. But then a curious and horrifying thing happened. A senator named Orrin Hatch, not, in my opinion, a force for good in this country, has attached a rider to a spending bill that became the Child Pornography Prevention Act of 1996, this extremely vaguely worded and probably unconstitutional law, which was meant to deter people from doing nasty things on the internet, putting children's heads on adult bodies, adult nude bodies, and selling all that. And taken literally, it would have a chilling effect not only on movies like ours, but on television shows, on paintings in museums, on magazines, on ads, on just about everything under the sun. But it put everyone involved with the production into a panic. And then we suddenly had a lawyer in the editing room demanding that things that were vital to the movie, including that comic scene, be taken out completely, because even if they didn't violate the law as it existed, and they did not, he was imagining new laws that might arise in certain localities and overzealous U.S. attorneys and small-town sheriffs and all sorts of things. He was scaring basically the bejesus out of everyone on the movie. And so we had what should only happen to a dog, a lawyer in the editing room. And if that did happen more often, only dogs would be directors.
Give me an example of what you took out because of the lawyer's advice.
Well, now that there's almost no nudity in the film, there was never nudity below the waist, but there was nudity above the waist. I think actually most of it was unnecessary to the film, and I'm glad that most of it was gone, but it was the lawyer who made it go. And there are moments that would be more, that would leave an absolute certainty in the viewer's mind about what's going on that now may leave in some minds some ambiguity.
Another difference between the page and a movie is that, you know, Lolita in the book, a real girl doesn't have to participate in the book. It's just all words on a page, where in the movie you need a real actress who is young and who has to enact a lot of these moments. Even if she has a body double, she's still enacting most of the screenplay. So what was there any kind of like counseling or education on the set to help the actress get what this was about and also not be emotionally disturbed by it? Was that an issue at all?
Well, by the time we started filming, Dominique Swain was 15. I don't know how many 15-year-olds you know, but a 15-year-old at Malibu High is not perhaps as naive as she would have been in 1947. And Dominique's mother was on the set at all times, and Dominique's tutor was on the set at all times. But frankly, I think Dominique could have taught everyone on the set a thing or two. I mean, she was not fazed by anything. She was not disturbed. She was having a good time being an actress and playing a role. And nothing that happened to her on the set was sexually threatening at all, because whenever there was something that was really, you know, sort of more nitty-gritty, there was an adult body double substituted for her. She had read the novel, so its content was not about to be shocking to her. She had read the novel and had auditioned by performing scenes from the novel for a videotape that she then sent to Adrian Lyne. So imagining that we might be destroying some innocence on her part, I don't think we were.
Nabokov obviously knew that he was in for trouble when he was trying to get Lolita published, and he answered that in a way in writing a fictional foreword to the novel, and the premise of this foreword is that it's being written by an academic who's been asked to edit Lolita for publication after Humbert's death. So in this foreword written by this fictional editor, he says that the most important part of this book is its ethical impact. That's its real worth, the ethical impact the book should have on the serious reader. For in this poignant personal study, there lurks a general lesson. The wayward child, the egotistic mother, the panting maniac, these are not only vivid characters in a unique story. They warn us of dangerous trends. They point out potent evils. Lolita should make all of us, parents, social workers, educators, apply ourselves with still greater vigilance and vision to do the task of bringing up a better generation in a safer world. That really reminds me of those disclaimers at the beginning of juvenile delinquent movies, where right before you got to have a lot of fun watching juvenile delinquents tear the place apart and ride their motorcycles, there was a disclaimer that said, this could happen in your town, so parents, teachers, beware. Did you kind of go back to Nabokov to help you figure out ways to explain Lolita, because you knew that there'd be some controversy about it?
The simple answer is no. I certainly enjoyed...
The simple answer to a really long question.
I certainly enjoyed your reading of that, and I could tell from your breathless tone that you know that it's parody.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not a genuine disclaimer of the kind that you're talking about, or the kind that probably most famously exists at the beginning of Howard Hawks' movie Scarface, in which he's about to go into an orgy of bloodletting, and he says, but these people are very, very bad, don't forget. And, you know... we certainly, that thought didn't cross our mind for a second, that we would turn to Nabokov for moral justification, since Nabokov offered none.
Stephen Schiff will be back in the second half of the show to talk more with us about his screenplay for the film adaptation of Lolita. The screenplay has just been published in book form by Applause Books. The movie opened today for a week run in Los Angeles. It premieres on the Showtime channel August 2nd and opens in theaters around the country in September. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Stephen Schiff. He wrote the screenplay for the new film adaptation of Lolita. When Nabokov wrote the novel in the 50s, he knew it would be controversial, and he knew that readers would demand his moral justifications for writing from the point of view of a pedophile. Nabokov wrote an essay about the book which said that for him, a work of fiction exists insofar as it affords him what he would bluntly call aesthetic bliss, a sense of being somehow connected with other states of being where art is the norm. Aesthetic value is the only justification, he said, was necessary. I asked Stephen Schiff if he felt the same way about the movie.
Well, in a way, yes, and in a way, no, because, of course, that is a public position that Nabokov notoriously took, which is to say, as I think I said before, he's against interpretation. He it's art for art's sake. What you see is what you get. And yet he, of course, knows that he's packing level upon level upon level into what he's writing. But it's not the level. You see, I mean, I always fear that we're in a culture that has forgotten how to, for want of a better word, consume and digest art, that we all think, because we're taught so poorly in the schools about it, that art should be a message-bearing device for the cultivation of young minds and whatnot. And that degrades art in such a terrible way. I mean, that becomes the Sovietization of art. And so by presenting this kind of what almost might be deemed an amoral attitude towards art, in a way, Nabokov is being disingenuous, because of course he knows that there's a lot more there. But it's not. But he's not going to invite you to find messages, and he's not going to invite you to find moral lessons. He's going to invite you to take in the whole as an aesthetic object, whereby you will also find its real complexity and its depth and its real meaning. And that, of course, you know, in our own humble way, was our approach too. This isn't a message movie, and nor should it be, because message movies are too easily shrugged off.
Have you had to come up with moral justifications for the movie to people who demanded it?
Well, I mean, I think that we do feel that when you see this movie, you won't come out saying, boy, that pedophilia looks like fun. And I do, I think it was a fortunate thing, in a way, that the approach that Nabokov took and the approach that we took was that, in a way, what Humbert does to indulge his obsession is absolutely ruinous to him and ruinous to everyone around him. So if message mongers wish to derive a lesson, that is the lesson. There's no lesson promoting pedophilia in this movie, nor can there be. The idea that to represent something is to condone it seems to have crept into the culture in ways that are saddening. I feel like the culture is shrinking at this moment, and that the reception of Lolita is a kind of litmus test that shows us that, because I think that it would not have had these problems in the late 70s, early 80s. And now I think a lot of movies that we take for granted as classics would have problems. I don't think you could release Taxi Driver now, for instance. I think, in fact, if you look at the Kubrick Lolita and our Lolita, it's as though they're bookends of a certain cultural period where, you know, at the beginning with the Kubrick Lolita, you have this naughty wink and smirk kind of ain't we being cute and funny and daring attitude as the culture expands and new things are being allowed to be talked about. And now suddenly we seem to be at the end of that era and the culture is shrinking again. And there's a feeling of if you don't talk about it, maybe it will go away. If you don't show people shooting each other in movies, maybe people will stop shooting each other in the streets. If you don't talk about pedophilia, then maybe it will disappear. And in a way, I think it's a very scary moment, and the reception for Lolita is a sign of how scary a moment that is.
Is Lolita rated?
Yeah, it got an R rating with absolutely no difficulty. Nothing had to be cut for it to get the R rating. It got the R rating first time out.
Was this a bit of an identity crisis for you? You know, you went from being film critic and journalist to screenwriter to smut purveyor, you know, because that's, I'm sure, the way you're seen in the eyes of some people who think that Lolita should not be a movie.
Well, Terry, no one's ever said that to me before, so it comes as a bit of a shock now that you're calling me a smut purveyor. No, one of the things that I felt surprised by and that I was naive about was I thought that the status of this novel would in a certain way insulate me from at least the accusation of being a smut purveyor. Because, I mean, look, this board set up by the Modern Library of Random House just convened to name the 100 greatest novels of the century in the English language. Lolita was number 4. I mean, you know, it's not like we just sort of picked up a Hustler magazine and made it into a movie. This is an extraordinary, extraordinary work of art. And I thought generally that was well known. And I've been so amazed by people coming up to me and saying things like, oh, so I guess you called her Lolita because I guess she was a kind of a Lolita, right?
That's great. Do you think that some people are so literal-minded that they can read a novel like Lolita and see it just as being about a pedophile and pedophilia is bad, therefore the novel is bad, without picking up on any of the tone or sensibility or larger meaning or anything?
Like you, I would have thought that was absurd. It is not absurd. Lots and lots of people are doing that, and lots of people will continue to do that. That's what I was saying before about the sort of collapse of our understanding of the uses of art. I think people are getting to the point now where they expect art to be such a message-bearing vehicle and nothing else, that when something, once they identify the subject matter, that's it. That's the end. If this person happens to be a pedophile, then it is some strange endorsement of pedophilia and should be banned from the shelves and, of course, from the movie screens. But it goes without saying that's a very limited view.
Was there anything you were called on to do or to respond to regarding the controversy around Lolita that struck you as just particularly odd or absurd?
Yeah, well, you know, the whole process has seemed odd and absurd. I began realizing lately that what happened was partly this. We were making Lolita. That would attract journalists, of course, and journalists were coming on the set and talking to us. And, of course, the idea was that this was going to be a pretty hotsy-totsy thing, what with Adrian Lyne directing and the new freedoms that we falsely, wrongly imagined that we had. And then the journalists would go back and write. And, of course, they would want to emphasize the hotsy-totsy aspect, which is something I understand. Then, of course, being journalists, they would say, well, let's get the other side. And they would go to groups, the family something or other group or the something or other for the something of children, you know, all these groups that exist across the country to lobby and make noise and take books off shelves and promote a largely fundamentalist agenda, but it's not always Christian-oriented necessarily. So they would go to these groups, and they would say, well, they're making Lolita. What do you think about that? It's going to be horrifying. What are you going to do? And they would say, they are? Well, we will march in the streets. We will picket them from, you know, they had never known that Lolita was being made, but they were being asked by the press for a reaction. Now the press prints the reaction. The studios read it and they say, oh, my God, if we release this film, we're going to have picketers up and down the block. We're going to have to beef up security. They're threatening, look, they're threatening to boycott our company and our amusement parks. Wait, they're threatening stockholder problems. So it all sort of burgeons and burgeons and burgeons. And that, being on the inside of that process, watching, you know, with my jaw slack, was very interesting.
So, Stephen, which job offers more anxiety, being the film critic or the screenwriter? The reverse of that, the half-full category would be which offers more pleasures.
Well, I'm very, very happy being a screenwriter now. I'm not really thinking much of returning to journalism in the near future. The rewards of screenwriting in every way at the moment topple those of journalism. But, you know, it's a very nice bubble to be in at the moment, and when it bursts and I come flying back to Earth, who knows?
Well, congratulations on your movies, and it's great to talk with you again. It's been several years since you were film critic here at Fresh Air, and it's just very exciting to see you go on to such a successful career in screenwriting, so congratulations.
Well, thanks very much. Fresh Air has a real warm spot in my heart and always will.
Stephen Schiff wrote the screenplay for the new film adaptation of Lolita. The screenplay has just been published in book form by Applause Books. The movie opened today for a week run in Los Angeles. It premieres on the Showtime channel August 2nd and opens in theaters around the country in September.